grab your beverages and turn up your interweb. Solving the world's problems 12 ounces at a time. It's Dudes and Beer.
Well, hello everybody. Welcome to episode 336 of the Dudes and Beer podcast. Chris Jordan here, coming to you in a pre-recorded fashion for the first time in I don't know how long, because I'm actively on the road working. How about that, everybody? There are miracles in the world, and I am experiencing one right now on the road. So let's thank the good universe that that is happening. And the people are getting back to road work. Shows are starting to happen again. Do what's right for you. Do what's right for your family. People, take care of each other. Take care of the whole world around you. That's all you have. Yes, the answer is I am smoking a pipe right now. I would like to thank my good friend Jeremiah Rouse for this beautiful pipe. It has been fantastic. I've been loving it. And I've decided that I'm going to start loving it on air. Just because I enjoy it that much. So, welcome everybody. Our guest today will be Mike Turber. We will be talking about, and granted, Mike has been on the show numerous times. Mike is our go-to correspondent. We will definitely be having him on come the beginning of October for October 1 for our episode revolving around that. That we do every year to remind people that, yes, we did have the greatest mass shooting in the country in Las Vegas. And people just seem to have forgotten about that. And there's all kinds of horrible things still going on over there surrounding that. So we will be getting into that with him in October. Mike Turber is, of course, the founder and moving force, the force majeure behind 5x5 News. He broke quite a bit of the Las Vegas shooting news that came out. He was the guy that went out and rode the elevators up to the floor and said, like, look, hey, man, if you can push an elevator button, you can get up there. This quote, secret elevator ain't so secret. Getting in ain't that hard. You don't have to have like a hard badge to do it. Just walk in like you own the place. And it's been interesting to have him as part of this. When the Naruto run was going to happen at Area 51, we joined with him. There were so many things that Mike Turber has brought to this show. It has been absolutely amazing. It's been fantastic to have him as a correspondent. And I thoroughly look forward to having him as a correspondent and guest for Curious Realm, to cover all these stories as they happen. Now, when we come back from break, folks, because you know we're going to break real quick. We always do at the top of the hour, talking to our first guest. When we come back, trigger warning, and believe me, when Curious Realm happens, we'll just have a trigger warning built into the intro, but trigger warning, folks, some of the information that you hear this evening may not be delivered in the way you want to hear it. It may not confirm what your beliefs are. That's okay. Remember that. Beliefs are beliefs. Fact is even, you know, relative to the observer, much like time. However, that doesn't mean that facts should not be considered. That just because we don't agree with them doesn't mean that we shouldn't think about them. And some of the things that we're going to be talking about tonight, especially within the movement of disclosure, especially within a lot of the UFO community, may not be popular, but it needs to be said, it needs to be considered, it highly needs to be thought about. We have to remember that with great claims comes a greater necessity for proof, comes a greater necessity for further knowledge and investigation. It means that we shouldn't just accept it on face value. We shouldn't just accept it because there are just news stories about it. As a matter of fact, that should make us question more, if anything. And I think that's part of what's not happening. The great thing is that it is open communication. It has opened minds and hearts of individuals who are in power, who may have poo-pooed this subject to begin with, as they have for decades. But that doesn't mean that just because a few people sitting in benches with name plaques in front of them and a little pointy microphone making decisions are about it and want answers, that doesn't mean that we should jump to conclusions. That doesn't mean that we should hop on bandwagons. It means that we should investigate hard. Like I say on this show all the time, no 100% of cases that happen for UFOs, ESP, crop circles, no, 90-95% of those are not valid. They're fake, or they're hoaxed, or they could even be explained through natural phenomenological means. You know what I mean? But it's that 5%, man. It's that 5% that, like, that's there. That's happening. And we know through the phenomenology that we're studying through that it's not natural and that there's something to it. So that's why further investigation needs to happen. That's why we're having this conversation. Because believe me, folks, I am a believer of believers, heart of hearts. I am a believer. But that does not mean I'm also a believer in my God, in the presence of my God in the world. That doesn't mean that if a dude came up to me today and said, "Hi, Jesus Christ, nice to meet you. Some friends are coming tomorrow. You should really pay attention." That doesn't mean that despite my faith, that I would not investigate further. That I wouldn't, you know, vet the story, so to speak. That I wouldn't be afraid to red team the topic, as they put it in a newsroom, which means, okay, you had a source come in that said that Libya has 28 nuclear weapons on a flatbed trailer coming over the Mexico border tomorrow. This is the source. Now, this is just a source that a reporter in a newsroom is being given. What have you? What does the news director say? Run it? No. He says not only investigate, the news director says, let's poke holes in this story. How credible are the witnesses? How credible are the sources? Do we have pictures? Let's start actively trying to take this story apart and dismantle it. And if it doesn't hold up to scrutiny, we run nothing. We don't even run the inkling of a story. And that's what we need to be ready to do with all of this information. We need to be ready to dissect it. We need to be ready to call it fake and maybe be wrong. And that's okay. So that's what we're going to be getting into with Mike Turber. Not that he's saying anything is fake. Not that I'm saying anything is fake. But we need to be ready for that conversation, folks. So when we get back from this quick commercial break of about a minute and a half of shameless self-promotion, we will be talking with Mike Turber, founder of 5x5 News, discussing everything UFO, UAP, Nimitz, press conferences, press releases. Is what's going on actively in Afghanistan a smokescreen? Is it prestidigitation politically to distract from the fact that what's about to hit is bombshell? And not necessarily bombshell in the way we think. When we get back from this message from our sponsors, folks, we will get into that and so much more with our guest, Mike Turber, founder of 5x5 News, right after this.
Have you considered starting a podcast? Looking for a way to make your business a voice of authority in an industry? Then Podcast Cadet is the solution for you. Whether starting a podcast for yourself, your brand, business, school, church, or just plain fun, Podcast Cadet is here to help you navigate the waters of the podcast industry. Specializing in one-on-one consultation and training with industry professionals in fields ranging from podcast technology and editing to distribution, monetization, and even social media strategies, Podcast Cadet tailors their services to the specific needs of you and your podcast. Do you already have a podcast and trying to find ways to engage and grow your audience? Sign up for your Podcast Cadet Audit today and let us help you explore new and exciting ways to leverage your content and elevate your podcast brand to whole new levels. From consultational workshops to affordable podcast production and maintenance packages, Podcast Cadet is your one-stop shop for everything podcast-related on the internet. Visit PodcastCadet.com today to sign up for your consultation or training and use code DUDES20 to save 20% off your entire purchase. That website again is PodcastCadet.com.
That is right, folks. Stop on by Podcast Cadet today. Full disclosure, I'm one of the founders. The whole reason I helped start Podcast Cadet is because I love this format. I'm a musician, I'm a performer, and I am also a broadcast technician and producer for many, many years. And I love this stuff. I like to make sure that people do it the best that they can possibly do it and to help them come up with a brand to get their message out there. So I teamed up with people to help make that happen. It's been fantastic. It's great to go out to places like we did here recently, to go out to Comic Palooza in Houston, up around a bunch of other comic book nerds like me, and teach them the art of podcasting, teach them those little finesse tricks on the internet, things like that. While you're online checking out the amazing goodness that is Podcast Cadet, make darn tootin' sure that you stop on by TrueHim Science. TrueHimScience.com is the website, folks, that you want to go to. Use code DUDE7. I came across Christopher Lynch, owner of TrueHim Science, here at a farmer's market in Austin, probably about 6 months after I started doing a bunch of road work for many, many years. It was probably about a month or so after I'd been doing road work regularly. And I'd gone to my doctor and been like, hey, can we work on my meds? Because my anxiety's a little kicking, you know, it's a little much sometimes. So I found Christopher Lynch, and that was probably about the third manufacturer of CBD I've tried. Now, granted, since then, many, many years now, I've tried numerous brands. Every time I go to a city where I can get that kind of stuff, like at a dispensary where it's like good stuff, not just like the stuff that you can buy off the shelf at the corner store, folks, but like formulated for medicinal use product, which is what they make at TrueHim Science. It's absolutely fantastic. They utilize a full spigeric process. And if you don't know what spigeric means, that basically means it's like old school Middle Ages alchemical process of getting they use the whole plant also. So not just the bud, they use the bud, the leaf, the stem, the root, everything to harness as much potency as they can out of the plant. Then after they've harnessed that, they destroy it and then filter all of that through the stuff and then do it again and again and again to extract as much potency out of all of that as possible. And I'm here to tell you, it's one of the only CBD oils that I can taste terpenes in whenever I put it in my mouth. It's one of the only ones that feels like a warm embrace. Like literally, when I take it in the morning, it's like I can take a deep breath for the first time in I don't know how long. I love it. Stop on by TrueHimScience.com today. Check out Christopher's product. While you're online checking that out, make sure on your way out the door at TrueHim Science to use the code DUDE7. Use the code DUDE7 at TrueHimScience.com on your shopping cart of $50 or more, and you will get not only 7% off your entire order, you will also get two hand size. I got a big hand, people. These cookies, I can grip like an eagle. Like, they are immense cookies. You get two either cookies or brownies, 25 milligrams each, for free with code DUDE7, as well as 7% off your entire order of $50 or more at TrueHimScience.com. While you're online checking that out, make sure to stop on by Google and Google Curious Realm. Don't care if you visit the website. You can. We don't have episodes there yet, but we have everything that Dudes and Beer has. So whenever we're referring to documents tonight in the episode with our guest Mike Turber, feel free to stop on by Curious Realm instead of Dudes and Beer and go to the same exact Knowledge Vault page. Guaranteed they will be there. It is a page-for-page copy of the website. We have just not populated posts yet because we haven't switched names and done episode one. So as soon as we switch names, you will start seeing things there. But until then, our call to action to you as an audience is Google Curious Realm. Have your friends and family Google Curious Realm. And if you want to see what it has done already, okay, check this out. Because I saw this happen at a bar two nights ago with somebody that Googled it. Watch this, folks. Just in the month that we have been asking people to Google Curious Realm, we are now on the top of Google's search ranking. Literally, simply by asking people to Google it. That doesn't mean that they visited the website. Nothing. And I know because I'm still doing some back-end work and I see the numbers on the website and the visits have not upped. This is all literally from you guys Googling something. That is the power that we hold. That is the sway that we and our curious minds hold, folks. So let's sway the world tonight. What do you say? Let's sway the world together. Let's all kind of lock arms. I'd like to teach the world to sing, Mike Turber. I'd like to teach the world to sing. You know what I mean, man?
I remember before the first Cisco commercial came out with it, I was like, man, that'd be come together right now over me. I was like, would be a perfect network router commercial.
Man, welcome back to the show, Mike. It is always more than a pleasure having you on. You are always a font of information, theorem, everything. So you are one of the many people that I thank for the tilt and direction of the pole of Dudes and Beer to the new axis we are on, that is Curious Realm. So thank you for all of that and for all of your hard work.
You're welcome. Good luck with the new name change and all. I think that's a very wise choice. I think that's going to remove some of the whatever thoughts people had to hold them back for whatever reason. I think, and you told me earlier that it already worked for you on your Facebook thing.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. We've literally doubled our Facebook page. We're almost at 1,000 followers now on the Facebook page, whereas before we jumped around at 500. Same thing with the group. It would go up to 500, it'd go down to 415.
Yeah,
you know, people would come, people would go.
Censoring you or something on the name on the original name?
Yeah, no. Yeah. I mean, even placing an ad, because that was of course a big catalyst, man. Like, we're trying to grow. We want to place some good placed ads, not to. Mainly just to get people to come like the page so the episodes pop up in their timeline. However, I was not able to place any kind of ad for anything, not even boost an ad on Facebook for one of my episodes because of the name Beer. Now, what's funny,
there you go.
I changed the name of the page and the group to Curious Realm, formerly Dudes and Beer. Soon as I did, Facebook let me run an ad. Beer is still in the title of the group and the page. Wow. So how or why their algorithm allowed me to do it by putting formerly Dudes in Beer? I don't know, but it worked. So yeah,
you must have put some secret meta tags in there or something that just favored you. That's what it was.
I guess so. You know, maybe we have a listener on the Facebook team.
That would be awesome.
Who knows? So, Mike, once again, thank you so much for your time. I know that you are busy in Florida right now taking care of all kinds of investigations for series and cases that have been reopened, things like that, with, you know, kitty cats and, you know, all that kind of stuff. However, let's start breaking into and cracking the nut of the UFO UAP question. I'm not going to say problem or quandary, like I said earlier. I think, if anything, it's opened up a huge realm of conversation that a lot of people were not willing to have. And for me, that's a good thing. That's what it's about.
Absolutely. I'm in full agreement with that. Even though after, you see, I was when I was growing up and when I was in my younger teens or whatever, I was all into UFOs and all that. And then the first tattoo that I ever got is actually the Drake equation and the chart, the Sagan. So it's the Sagan Drake thing that's on the disc that's on the Pioneer 10, you know, Voyagers and all anything solar system has that on it. So that's what's on my right shoulder. And I've had, you know, people say that as a debunker slash skeptic slash, you know, whatever term people want to put on it. Yeah. I'm an investigator. That's kind of what I do now, yeah. I guess. But you know, I look into those things and I want so badly for these things to be real. And it's entrenched in me to make certain that what I look at and what I'm looking at is actually what I'm looking at. Cause I know people can do some crazy things, you know, with all kinds of stuff, or you get tired, you see things, whatever it is, it doesn't make any difference. The key thing is that the person that sees whatever it is they see, you have to be respectful to that person as best you can, unless they're cramming it down your throat or something, you know. But I think for the most part, a lot of people have a misconception on what a debunker is. We're not trying to come in and prove that you're wrong and that aliens don't exist. We're trying to prove that the object that you're looking at is what you think it is, or let you know that it might not be what you think it is. That way you're not running around telling a story that either A, is not true, or, you know, if it is true, then by all means, you should be screaming at the top of your lungs and, you know, hitting the networks and all of this stuff.
Yeah.
But everything changed December 16th of 2017 when, you know, when TTSA was basically launched and Lou Elizondo got on stage and had left the, you know, it added an air of credibility to this entire genre of ufology and, you know, UFO skepticism. And, you know, it brought us all together. We kind of like, everybody was like, wow, we're all in the same room again. This is kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, because there was a new mystery that seemed to have a lot of new evidence that just seemed irrefutable and all this other stuff, which created a huge challenge. But at the time, I was right in the middle. I mean, the Las Vegas shooting had just happened, and I was in the very first throes of it, so I didn't have time to even look at it. You know, but then obviously that changed, and over time I started looking deeper and deeper into it, and I put out some information, and I got contacted by people making documentaries and stuff, and, you know, and the rest is kind of history down the way.
Yep.
But it's a love-hate relationship. People love to hate me. So, and that happens, and so I understand all that. And I'm kind of brash. I'm not PC. You know, I'm not one of those guys that goes out all that stuff. But, you know, it is what it is. But we do have some cool stuff to let everybody know about tonight.
Yeah, yeah. And that's just it, Mike. I think a lot of people sadly expect everybody to confirm their datum and their points of data.
Right.
Rather than just considering it data and datum and not getting passionate about it.
Right.
You know,
and it's hard not to. I fully understand that.
Sure.
And I get it. You know, let's pretend everybody on the planet had the same religion. We all believe the exact same thing. And someone came from another planet and said, we're wrong. This whole planet would be up in arms against that individual or that entity or whatever telling us we're wrong. But they're coming from another planet.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, are they ahead of us? Do they know something we don't? So that's when all the little mystery starts. So and then everybody starts dividing out. You know, that's a weird analogy or whatever, but that's kind of how I look at things. I look at things from a point of skepticism. It's not that I don't want to believe. It is the exact opposite. I absolutely want to believe. I mean, my whole life was the fascination of space. I mean, I was born during the largest meteor shower ever witnessed in the 21st or 20th century, November 18th, 1966, 250,000 meteors per hour. That's ridiculous. That's a ridiculous one.
Yeah.
You're lucky to see, you know, 60 if you're lucky. This is 250,000. Yeah, so that always came into my mind. People say, well, why are you into astronomy? And I said, well, you know, because when I was born during the largest meteor shower ever. But on to where we're at now. I was fascinated buy those three videos that came out, like everybody. Yes. I don't think there's a person on the planet that has not either seen them or has not, looked at them and said, wow, that's amazing. And so, but the more and more I looked at them, the less and less amazing they became. But then Dave Beatty came out with the Nimitz Encounters, his documentary. And that brought in the people side of it. Brought in the Kev Day. It brought in David Fravor, Alex Dietrich, which, is new to the scene now because she was the unnamed other pilot. All of these people that anyone in the UFO community, we know these people by even their first name. Or we'll just say Dave, and everybody knows who we're talking about.
Yeah.
As you go through this, as an investigator, if you try to debunk something like this, you're in a real pickle. Because on one side, you're not trying to prove that it's not aliens. You're not trying to prove that it's not a UFO, UAP, or that it's, a lot of people say about Mick West that it's a bird, things of that nature. You're just trying to look at it objectively to see what it is, because that's what I do. I go in and I, like with the Las Vegas case, and I look at things from a little bit different perspective with a little bit different skill set. And I am a little bit ultra critical against myself and against the evidence being brought to me, because at the time, the evidence that I had, like at Las Vegas, was going into the attorneys. They were actually taking what I brought them, and that was going to go in the case if it ever went to trial. And so circle back to this, and here you have what you're looking at on the screen. These three videos captured everyone's attention and imagination. And if it wasn't for this, we wouldn't be having this discussion, because it's truly amazing.
It has been a heck of a roller coaster ride, is really the only way to put it, since we have been together on this show, Mike. And see, once again, like I said, the swath of datum that has come out on this, as well as the amount of things being, I guess, pushed along with it,
I think another thing too is when a mass amount of people believe in something similar, maybe not necessarily the exact same thing. It's just like how we have different religions, and how even you have different people that believe different sects of science, different ways of doing things. You may go to five different doctors and they'll treat you five different ways, but they're trying to save you. It's a similar thing that I go through. And as I look at it, I look at the community as like people like me, who's a true skeptic. I have to see it to believe it, kind of thing, to the other end of the spectrum. But then you have those in the middle that are on each borderline I believe they came here, but I don't think they're here every day. I don't think they're flying around Ryan Graves, who's the other pilot on the East Coast. And he said he was seeing them every day.
Yeah.
So if we're seeing them every day, what's going on, guys? There's something wrong with our military, or we don't have better pictures, So all of these things are just natural questions that a skeptic would bring up. And of course, the other side wants to, it goes back and forth. It's a debate. It gets heated at times. And, but it's healthy, I guess, overall, because in the end, the more I don't want to say heated it gets, but the more intense that it gets, that just shows that the person that's probably getting intense really truly wants to find out what's going on.
And that's just it. That's the difference between a fan and believer and an investigator.
Yep.
Not that you don't love the topic, not that you don't love the technology involved with it. Excuse me. Just developed the hiccups. But it's more the fact that the onus falls on us to research, to look at this, to see what happens. you know, and to be willing to be wrong. You got to be willing to be wrong.
I've been wrong many times in this investigation. In most investigations that I've been in, I start off with a hypothesis. I don't work in reverse, which is, you know, to basically try to prove your point is the correct point. What I do is I say, you know, I think it may be this. Let me see. But I had some advanced knowledge, too, because keep in mind, I did hear the comms way back in 2005. But I didn't pay attention to them. I didn't know really what they were until I saw the Dave Beatty thing. And I was like, OK, so, yeah, that event really happened. But as I moved forward, I was like, you know what? That's kind of irrelevant to anything that's going on now. So let's really expand this. So I jumped in with, you know, both feet and went across the country. I've been to many bases. I've been to many contractors. I've been to Lockheed Skunk Works. I've been to Raytheon. I've been to Lockheed Martin, you know, different facilities. I'm literally 500 feet from one. Actually right now. I'm right down the road from another one here in Lakeland. But as time progressed in my investigation, I started finding things that I felt like I was going to be the only one that would find them because of the route I started taking. I didn't go the full FOIA route the entire time. I figured, you know what, let me just get in the trenches, ask people questions, and call them. Just get them on the phone and just let them know it's gone because I feel comfortable with that. But, you know, that was my approach, and that did get together some information that was pretty interesting. And now I'm at a point where I'm verifying information through the FOIA process. And I put in a FOIA on August 1st. They received it August 2nd. It was approved on August 10th. And I got my first data on August 17th. How's that for a whirlwind?
That is a pretty decent turnaround for government work, man. That's impressive. I'm actively waiting on some DVDs to be delivered that I had printed and have not seen things that fast.
I sent you the screen, the picture of the actual FOIA request. This particular FOIA came out for a specific reason, and I will get into that. And what that was trying to do some explanation as to a lot of these people that were at the Nimitz encounter event, or we'll say the Nimitz event. I believe them. I believe the pilots. Everyone, you know, a lot of people say, well, you're calling them liars. No, I've never said the word that any pilot is lying. What I'm saying is, I, you know, just like anyone, you know, are you sure that's exactly what you saw? Because the stories conflict. And if you go back and look at the original testimony, they conflict and whatever, you know, but over time, people, you know, think things a little differently. So what I wanted to do too, was get some factual information that actually is, you know, scientifically achieved. And so there's a method we could put behind it to so other people can see. But one of the things that kept gnawing at me was that Kevin Day stated that the event started happening on November 10th and that they ended on November 16th. And so, and those dates kind of stuck out with me because I had already heard those dates before. But I didn't push the issue because I had already went through what I went through with the documentary people. But I decided to, you know, let me explore this a little further and see if there's something with this. And maybe it might relate to something that people were seeing. One of the things that I found, and I know people hate hearing this part about the object, but it was that a very large number of weather balloons were launched at the same time from November 10th through November 16th in support of the X-43 Hyper X missile project. And that was a Hyper X missile that went to Mach 9.6. But I was looking at that and it's like, well, obviously none of these sightings could be a balloon. It just doesn't really match, other than possibly what Fravor saw, you know, as it came up towards him or whatever. But other than that, the other sightings just didn't make sense. And keep in mind, Kevin Day said that the object would seem to fall from space, come down to a certain altitude, they would regroup and then start moving at about 100 knots at about 28,000 feet,
to the south. And eventually they would either disappear or disappear over Guadalupe. But occasionally some would go down to the ocean surface at like 50 feet. So, and he said they were in groups of about five. Groups of five. Sometimes up to 10 or whatever. He said groups of five on the first one, as I remember. So I was like, I was thinking, wow, there's got to be something here with the number five. So what I did was, in my research, there were what NASA had called, if you look at the second launch of the X-43, you'll see they refer to the weather balloon as a special balloon. And I have found out that that special balloon does have some rather unique characteristics that allows it to go up extremely high, not burst, and come back down, acquire a new altitude, level out, and fly at that altitude. They're called buoyancy layer pressurized balloons. There's other names for it too, but the buoyancy layer pressurized balloons, those move at a certain altitude so that they can track weather patterns at that altitude. When you launch a weather balloon, they normally just go straight up, or not necessarily straight up, but they meander with the wind, and they get up to about 100, 110,000 feet, and they burst, and then they just fall back down, and they're done. Well, it seems like a big wave. So what they did was they started making balloons that they could pressurize a certain chamber and allow the balloon to actually adjust its altitude based on the buoyancy of the air inside the bag. So if it wanted to go up, it could. If it wanted to go down, it could. And what have you, it couldn't steer and fly around. You know, a lot of people are saying, are you saying that a balloon was going, you know, Mach 25 or whatever it is that the Tic Tac was going? No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm just trying to put a piece of the puzzle in to explain what Kevin Day saw on the radar. But one thing was gnawing at me. One thing that was gnawing at me was, he said that they were in groups of five. Now, if I told you that five planes were flying in from the coast and they were in groups of five, how far apart would you say those planes would be?
Typically, I would think that they would at least be a plane width apart, if not two to three. I mean, if you're talking one plane width, that's like Blue Angel status flying.
Mm-hmm. And so for the longest time, I had, I guess, pictured in my mind that these objects can't be those balloons because they were launched. Two balloons were launched from Point Magoo. Two balloons were launched from San Nicolas Island. And one balloon was launched from Vandenberg Air Force Base. Well, those places are far apart. It's not like these things are going to group up and somehow fly around. So I let go of it. I was like, well, that can't be it. And I kind of put it to the side. And then it came back to me. I was like, wait a second, because I started reading some more about the buoyancy layer pressurized balloons. And then I kept going back to, why is the Air Force calling these special weather balloons? What is so special about these weather balloons? And then it hit me. I contacted Kevin. I said, Kevin, let me ask you a question. I said, do you recall how far apart those balloons were? Are those objects? Sorry, I keep saying balloons. Those objects that you saw tracking in on the radar? And he says, oh, yeah. I said, about how far apart were they? About 10 miles or more. 10 miles. So immediately my mind just started racing. I was like, and so I sent him back a message. I said, bingo. Because this whole time I had visioned that these things were like within hundreds of feet of each other, you know, tracking in and so. And it wasn't that Kevin didn't give an accurate indication of the objects. It's just that on the screen, on a radar screen, they probably do look really close together. And he wasn't thinking that, oh, someone is going to interpret this as them being hundreds of feet away from each other. I better clarify that they were over 10 miles apart. And so that was the bell and whistle that I needed to hear to push the FOIA request, because I was holding off on it going, yeah, I don't really have enough on this one. But I did have some contacts at NASA that were working with me a little bit, but a lot of the stuff is 17 years old. And, you know, just they weren't, you know, there wasn't much they can do. So then I got some help. I can't say who, but you'll see by the whirlwind tour that this FOIA request took on August first. And, you know, I've been bugging this particular individual for a little while. And so apparently they didn't make a call, and my FOIA got pushed pretty close to the front or whatever it is they were doing. And now they didn't just email me. They called me. NASA called me.
Oh, wow.
They called me. I was like, I answered the phone. Well, I answered the phone. I hung up on her at first because I did the wrong button. Because I saw that, it's kind of freaked out.
Yeah.
I was like, okay. I answered the phone the second time. And the girl's name's, I'll just say her first name's Clarissa. And she asked me if I was, you know, my turbo, blah, blah, blah. I had FOIA request in about the X-43. I said, yes. And she said, you know, she had some information for me. And so we talked for a bit, and there's more information coming. But, you know, I was sent 331 pages right away, which was a book that was written by one of the reporter people there. But one of the key things that was in that book was this. I had stated at one time that I believe the object that Chad Underwood filmed was a F-18. And the reason why I stated that was because I took imagery from the app flare that Dave Fouts had created of a plane banking to the left. Next thing you know, it looked just like the same image of the flare that I had on the Tic Tac at the same angle. But of course, it was much closer, so it was much clearer. So what I did was I fuzzed it out, pushed it out like it was far away, and they matched. And I was like, wow. That was an F-18 that he filmed from X number of miles away. But I can't say for 100% sure it was, but it kind of looked like it. But I had a problem because the F-18s are accounted for. The Navy knows where their planes are, right?
Yep.
Okay. Well, come to find out that those days from November 10th to November 16th, there was other aircraft in there that day, the B-52. It was, you know, flying the X-43 out. But the chase planes were F-18s. NASA has their own F-18s. That is the unexplained non-transponder aircraft that was in that airspace that no one knew what it was or where it was, but it was far enough away that it wasn't really interacting with anybody because it was well beyond the range of the radar. I'll be about the app flare, but we now can account for two more F-18s that were in the area during those days.
And you know, it's interesting that you bring up the F-16 Falcon. I mean, number one, it's one of my favorite planes ever.
No, F-18 Super Hornet.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about there was a F-16 involved as well there, but.
No, the B-52, just the B-52 and the two chase planes were F-18 Super, or F-18, just F-18s. I don't even think they were Super Hornets.
Okay. Let's start getting into, I guess, some of the facts of the case on the Nimitz. Like you said, Kevin Day, he was there, but the data that he's talking about is not what's there, right? That's not what they're claiming anyway, is that they were that far apart.
Well, what Kevin was telling me was that when I was asking him the objects that you were tracking coming in, you know, I guess just the way we all visualize it, the way Dave Beatty even put it on in the graphics, it kind of seemed that way. But I don't even think Dave Beatty showed the Tic Tacs flying in a pattern. Anyway, back to you. What was your actual question on that? I'm sorry.
Oh, no. I was just going to go into the practicalities of the story from the Nimitz, from the accounts on the Nimitz, and of the, you know, famed pilot cockpit video. Things are not the camera, not the gunnery camera video, folks, but the pilot cockpit video of these things. Like, because like you were saying, you just try to give out data. You just try to look at data. If you're wrong, you're wrong. Cool, whatever. I was looking. Were you, or were you just accepting? Because your job is to investigate and investigate dispassionately.
Right.
And
data.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of like going into a lab and finagling things to make sure your result is to your expectation.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just letting it happen and seeing if it meets the previous expectation, you know.
Right. And there were a lot of mysteries that were there. You know, one of the prime mysteries was just that, like we talked about a minute ago, was the Navy obviously has their planes accounted for.
Yeah.
Why would there be a mystery plane, whether it be, you know, a civilian jetliner or any aircraft inside that operating area? And a civilian aircraft wouldn't be in that operating area. And so that's where, I guess, Mick West and I diverted a little bit, because he was claiming it was most likely a civilian airliner. And I'm like, no, but you know, he and I, we talk, but not like super often. And once I went down that rabbit hole of the F-18, I was like, okay, I cannot take it. I have to find out where these F-18s came from. My first theory was that it might be Chad Underwood's missing wingman, because we don't have a report from him. We don't have a statement. Nothing. Of all the pilots that were out there that day, you know, we have the wingman from David Framer, or wingwoman, which is Alex Dietrich. You know, we have Chad Underwood, which was, you know, the wingman for his play. Chad was the wizard anyway. But we don't have that other F-18 accounted for. We don't know where it was. I even asked Kevin. I said, he doesn't remember where the specific was, but obviously they would account for the planes. And that was a stumbling block for me. I was like, wow, I know in my mind, I'm thinking, I know it's an F-18 because, God, I've been looking at this thing for 60 straight hours. Where did this thing come from? And I was thinking, well, maybe it flew out of Miramar. So now I'm looking at flights out of Miramar. That's too far away, and all these different locations. And then, boom, I see this and I go, wow, the chase planes for that B-52 that had been flying in that area, practicing their runs, were F-18s.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. And that's curious. You know, even still curious is the case of the black boxes missing from the F-18s on the Nimitz that the Air Force came and took.
Yep, and I got some information on that too.
Do it.
Well, that information is in three different locations. One of those is in Morristown, New Jersey. The other is at Wright-Patt Air Force Base, Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And the other one is going to remain undisclosed at this moment. That way, if someone comes up to me and says they know where they are, I'll say, okay, what's the mystery one?
Yeah.
But, so that's it. So I'm trying to get information on that. Now, keep in mind that those Air Force personnel, now there's four. I say there's four people that were there. You had two from the Air Force that were in Air Force uniforms and flight uniforms. There was actually five as far as what I'm kind of coming up with. But this is all hypothetical. This is still speculative. I don't have data on this, hard data, other than what the testimony of the people that saw them were. So you have two from the Air Force, and you have two that were contractors that came on board to monitor some testing of some new equipment that was being tested. Now, I did verify that equipment was being tested, and I did verify that they were using DRFM technology at that time. And that will account for quite a bit of what you see on the East Coast. Mercury Systems is a company that makes that. Anyone that's listening to this can look that up. And they sold that equipment to them just before the events on the East Coast started happening. A different company was manufacturing the DRFM technology that was used on the West Coast. Now, I was told that they don't use DRFM technology on ourselves.
Oh.
Come to find out and verify, this is something I verified, they do. They used it during the Red Team events. And what happens is they'll put out a plane, like a Growler any plane, it doesn't really matter, and they put the DRFM technology in it and transmit, so it looks like you've got, you know, Russian MiGs coming in, or you can make them look like anything you want. One thing is, I've got a piece of audio here. Let me try to see if I can pull this up.
Okay.
Let's see, how do I do this here? go over here. I think I just I didn't quit. You're still there, right?
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. I'm here. Now,
don't lose it.
As you search for that clip, let's think about one of the first questions that came from an audience member today regarding this, what we're talking about right now and regarding the Nimitz and even the whole situation. You there?
Hey. Hello?
Who's this guy? This guy hacked into our conversation.
Huh. Yes. I am Q. Who are you?
Well...
You miserable earthlings.
I got you, Chris.
I just landed in my Tic Tac.
Oh, nice. How is it in there? Plenty of leg room?
Plenty of leg room, yeah. You know why? Because the volume is much bigger inside than the outside surface area because the geometry is non-Euclidean. That's part of Einstein's general theory of relativity.
Mm. And kind of like
Jacques Vallée talked about that in one of his, his Fast Walker book, that he claims that he saw a retrieved flying saucer where you walk into it. It's like it's 30 feet across from the outside, but when you walk in the interior, it's huge. And that's exactly what happens like in a black hole, you know, like in the interior of a black hole, the volume is much bigger than the surface area would suggest. It's non-Euclidean geometry.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in any case, why are you calling now, Mike? What's the...
You know me. I call you, and, you know, whenever I think of something, I had a physics... I knew we were going to get into some of that, and I wanted to surprise Chris, and I think I did.
Yeah.
I got you.
Did you tell him that I'm probably... half extraterrestrial and only half human.
As long as your work isn't half.
Yeah.
Well, that's the whole point. My physics is coming from the Tic Tac intelligence itself.
Exactly.
I think that's a fair... No. I'm half joking, but I'm half serious.
Right.
You know, because that's what it seems to be over the last 70 years or so that I've been working on this problem since I was about 10 years old. And since I think I met Phil Corso back then, since my grandfather was working for the Army, and I used to hang out at Army headquarters at the Quartermaster Corps in the Garment District. And I'm pretty sure I met Phil Corso, and we were talking about flying saucers back around 1949.
Wow.
That's 2 years after Roswell. Now, I can't be sure it was Phil Corso, but it was some Army guy. when I saw Phil Corso's picture, you know, day after Roswell, and I know Bill Burns, you know, wrote the book, it rang a bell. It looked like a, you know, it could be a false memory. I don't know. You know, it's 1949,
1950. Where were you? You were like 30 then, right?
But, you know... But the point is, I've been thinking about flying saucers since I was a kid in the late 1940s. And then, as you know, Mike, you know, the CIA and the Defense Department basically officially kind of recruited me into studying the problem by around 1973.
Oh, wow.
Al Puthoff and Russ Targ at the Stanford Research Institute and that whole strange story. So I've been working on the damn problem. Along with a couple of other physicists, and we've solved the problem. We understand exactly, in principle, you know, how these flying saucers, I'm not talking specifically right now about Tic Tac, it includes Tic Tac, but all the evidence over the past hundreds of years, thousands of years, of these weird contacts that people have had, we understand how it works. It's Einstein's general theory of relativity and quantum mechanics. It's elementary physics, and as you know, Mike, I get very pissed off and very angry when I hear the people from TTSA, when I hear Chris Mellon and Louis Elizondo and Jim Semivan, and of course, when I hear them telling the government that the technology is 1,000 years ahead of us. It's right. Not. Yeah, you know, we understand the physics right now, and what's really important is that the Russians know this, because the Russians, Vladimir Putin's agents, have been monitoring my work for decades, you know, and they actually videoed me about it a couple of times during Obama's administration.
Yeah. Back in October 2013, I think they were handing you, weren't they in Orlando with you? Or not with you?
But... Orlando, no, I was in Orlando, that's 2011.
Oh, okay.
2011. A film team from allegedly from St. Petersburg, Channel 5, which is a television channel that's owned by a close friend of Vladimir Putin's, they came and videoed me about all this stuff, which I knew, you know, back then. Back then, I wasn't as advanced as I am now in 2021. And destiny and synchronicity would have it, I was actually with Hal Puthoff and Kit Green.
Oh, wow.
At the end of October in 2017, when they would run out to the room and they were making calls, setting up the whole New York Times thing with Leslie Keene.
Yeah.
So the whole thing is kind of very, very strange. All yeah. right. But the message is the problem, the physics, we understand the basic laws of nature of how these things work. It's low power warp drive, and it's a conscious intelligence, a conscious artificial intelligence that's controlling it. We understand how it works. It's elementary physics. It's physics that can be taught undergraduate, you know, Berkeley, Caltech, MIT. It's not difficult.
Yeah. And so one of the, Jack helped me out on early on, because, you know, my knowledge of this, I've got a basic rudimentary understanding of physics, but when it came down to some things, I was an idiot. And over the last, what, year and a half or so, however long we've been talking to each other, I've started grasping some of the finer concepts and what have you, and it's starting to make sense. You know, one of the things that people say is the G-forces, they couldn't stand that. Well, there's no G's inside that craft at all. They don't experience
it. That's warp drive. That's what warp drive, and that's what general relativity, Einstein's theory from 1916, it basically predicts all that. It's pretty elementary stuff to physicists.
And you're a fan of the Alcubierre warp drive, right?
Well, the Alcubierre warp drive, yeah. Well, it's just a toy model. It's a simple model, right. The basic idea. Yeah, but it's elementary physics. Yeah, we understand. You know, the real stuff is a lot more complicated than the Alcubierre. You know, it's just a, you know, theoretical physicists, we make toy, what are called toy models. We try to simplify the problem to get to the essence. And yeah, so it's, yeah, the Alcubierre warp drive. What's happening is that the Tic Tac, if it's moving toward you, say it's moving collision course with you, it's shrinking the space in front of it and expanding the space behind it. Right. But it's doing it with small amounts of energy. See, that's the trick. That's the problem. That's the problem I solve. That's the problem, basically, that the Central Intelligence Agency guys and the Defense Department guys back in 1973 were asking me to work on.
Back then, wasn't the math that it would take virtually all of the energy in the universe to accelerate?
Right, exactly. Yeah. But that's false. Obviously, it's false because you see these things flying around. It's false. And the reason it's false is that they forgot a certain – it's technical, but it involves metamaterials, you know, artificial materials. You hear Louis Elizondo talking about metamaterials, but he doesn't know what they really are. He doesn't know how to work. And it's true. They found some of these metamaterials maybe in retrieved craft. But these metamaterials have extraordinary electromagnetic properties. They have what are called resonances. When you pump the metamaterial with electromagnetic energy, you add energy, electromagnetic energy to the metamaterial, it can resonate. And what it does, it amplifies the coupling of that electromagnetic field to the gravity field. So you're able to generate a very strong gravity field with a small amount of electromagnetic energy density. That's basically what's going on. It's called the metamaterial resonance. And it only happens if the metamaterial is just sitting there, nothing's going to happen. You have to pump it with the right frequencies and wavelengths of electromagnetic energy, you know, from an external source in order to get it to do this. But that's what we see the Tic Tacs doing.
So from a standard, from metamaterial to a normal material, if someone's going, because they hear metamaterial, the only word they hear different is meta. From material
If yeah, you
better material is an art. The better material is a lattice. It's a sort of a crystalline structure of artificial atoms. With nanotechnology, we make these artificial atoms that have these nice properties. We design them any way we want. You just go to Wikipedia, you look at the term metamaterial, you Google metamaterial, you'll see thousands of articles. There's hundreds of scientists already working on metamaterials because they have all different kinds of applications. They're used in stealth, you know, in cloaking ships, stuff like that, and invisibility cloaks. There you go. So there's a lot of work. But what people don't know is that these metamaterials can be used to amplify the coupling of applied electromagnetic fields to the gravitational fields, the warp drive fields that are needed for what we see happening with these. Mike doesn't think the videos of the Nimitz encounters are real. Maybe Mike is right. I don't know. But that doesn't matter because that's just a couple of little pieces of evidence. There's a lot of other evidence for the reality. Phenomenon.
Oh, I hope.
I absolutely agree with that. And like I said at the beginning of the show, Jack, I am a huge believer. I mean, I keep track of crazy amounts of science news, things like that. I work major conferences, and as an AV tech, where I have like the head of like Lockheed Martin's space science division on my stage talking about like interstellar ion engines for an hour. So it's interesting to hear these things and even to hear you bringing up metamaterials, because that is, of course, a topic that we've been talking about here for a while and with Mike for quite a while, especially all the new things that come out. Now, what I have held as far as this information, what has come out, like you're saying, we definitely have the technology. We have the means to make this.
Yeah. Our problem is we have a lot of stupid people in the government, in the American government, that are preventing progress.
Yeah.
That's our real problem. I call it the stupidity barrier because the Russians are ahead. The Russians, my ideas are taken very seriously in Russia. I was told that Vladimir Putin himself is aware of Jack Sarfati, okay? And also Donald Trump is aware of Jack Sarfati. I was told that by a couple of CIA guys who talked to Trump about it. So, and another fact is that several hundred Iranian physicists from Tehran and Iran have been tracking my work, and I can prove this very easily.
Yeah.
Tracking for 30 years.
Yeah.
So the point is, and I don't know about the Chinese. So the point is, the only people who are not really paying attention are the Americans, when the Russians and the Iranians are already working on my stuff.
Yep.
Okay, and that's a fact. I can prove that. Willing to testify in Congress about that, talk to the CIA, to the, you know, the Defense Department. But I can prove everything I'm saying.
Well, it's literally that fact from Eisenhower's farewell speech, Jack, of beware the industrial military complex, but understand that we've opened this genie bottle and there ain't no putting it back. All we can do is curtail it. It takes an educated populace to keep this in check and in control.
Well, keep it in control. But let me say just a funny thing. I was in the Air Force ROTC at Cornell, 1950s. And President Eisenhower came and, reviewed us. You know, we marched past him saluting Eisenhower. So I'm just saying there's a...
Well, for me, it's the fact of, and I've held on this show before, like last time we had Mike on, the big bell that we kept ringing was the fact that a couple of years ago, the U.S. Navy literally put out not only a patent, but there were popular mechanics and popular science articles.
Okay, let's start. That's all bullshit, though.
About the laser system that's chaff?
No, I'm talking about the Pius. You're talking about the Pius?
No. I'm talking about the fact that there is full-on technology where we can send a laser infrared projection that is visible to the eye, visible to radar, and looks just like...
I don't know about that. I thought you were trying something else.
It's a technology that's out there. So for me, it's the fact of, are these companies who have had these metamaterials from things that, hey, they may be recovered craft, whatever, Jack. But The fact is, we have the metamaterials. We now have the science to apply the metamaterials. There's no way that these contractors can make money in the private industry unless they're released to the public.
Yeah. Okay.
You know? Well,
let me say something.
even the fact that these folks leaking the information out to the public. Okay. So we have the technology to do stuff. Are we doing things as a means by which to kind of shake that hand and go, let's go forward technologically, and to announce the fact that UFOs exist, UAPs exist, they're real, is the only way that we can actually say, listen, man, we've been working on this technology for decades.
Okay, but no, they haven't. They have and they haven't. Depends what you're talking about.
Sure.
There's a lot of work being done on metamaterials. There are many different kinds of important technological applications of metamaterials. But what they're not working on is my particular discovery, because they don't know about it, how the metamaterials can amplify gravitational fields with small amounts of energy. That they don't know, I'm pretty sure. Unless they've been reading my stuff, they, you know, they may know. But they would have been in touch with me if they knew. They don't know. And part of the reason they don't know is that people like Eric Davis and Colonel John Alexander and Christopher Mellon are preventing my ideas from being known by the right people. There's a barrier. They're putting up a barrier. They're stonewalling me, and that's very bad for national security because the Russians take me very seriously, and the Russians are working on my stuff. I'm quite sure of that. So there's a political problem you got.
So, Jack, the metamaterials, that would require the entire surface of the craft to be made out of that, correct?
Yes. It's a fuselage. It's all a metamaterial fuselage, yes.
Okay. And that'll help protect it as it's. We know it's not moving and the space is coming towards it or being pushed away from it.
It doesn't, The flying saucers in warp drive, they don't move through space the way jet planes move space.
Right.
What they're doing, they're just floating. They're controlling the curvature of space with small amounts of energy. That's what Einstein's field equation is all about. And so it's kind of like, did you read Frank Herbert's Dune? Remember Frank Herbert's Dune, where the spice, where they fold space, they just kind of, you're controlling the geometry of space-time. So you can effectively move wherever you want to go. And by the way, it also permits time travel. See, time travel, very important.
You should know.
All those things are definitely possible with the physics that we have today.
Wait. Let's get something clear. It's no longer a question of possibility.
Yeah.
I say it's a fact.
Yep.
That's the only way to understand the flying saucer phenomena. And
yes,
by the way, the CIA knew this 50 years ago when I was 30 years old at SRI. They were talking about flying saucers coming back from the future. They already knew this back then.
Yeah. Yeah.
They didn't know how it worked though. They wanted me and a couple and other guys, like put off this guy, to try to figure out how it works. Okay. And we finally did it. It took 50 years to do it, but in the last couple of years, we really got it down. Now we understand it. So whenever you hear Louis Elizondo or Chris Mellon or Jimmy Simivan or any of these, you know, guys in the media, when they say we don't understand it, that's bullshit. We do understand it. They don't understand. They don't. They're preventing the understanding from reaching the important people in our government. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
Why stop that progress? Maybe there's something going on behind the scenes that we're not aware of.
There's nothing going on because you want to know something? All these guys are preventing my information getting right. They're all pretty stupid. I know who they are.
Yeah.
I know what they know. They're dumb. They just don't understand the physics.
Yeah.
Well, I guess what I was getting at, I know, and there's a correlating actual real event that occurred. Remember the movie Contact when they built that device to go I can't remember Dr. Haraway, whatever her name was. She went, and then the machine was destroyed.
What are you talking about?
One when you can build two, right?
So I'm sorry, but I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, the movie Contact.
Yeah, well, that's a movie. Okay, I'm talking about reality now.
But I'm bringing reality into it. A lot of those things are being built behind the scenes, just like the
Well, let's get this clear. You're giving too much credit to the military-industrial complex. I know a lot of these guys. They're pretty stupid, okay? They don't know physics the way I know it. Listen, they're good in certain things. You know, so yeah, they could build jet planes. They can build, yeah, that they know. But they don't know Einstein's theory of gravity very well, because it's not taught very well in most of the universities, even today. It's only taught in a few places. And the places where it's taught, these guys, they have huge contracts from the government. I know them, Guy Kip Thorne, and they stay away from anything having to do with the UFOs. You know, it's the woo-woo factor.
Right.
So there's a political, cultural problem here. The only thing I agree with what Christopher Mellon, those guys say, is that there is a problem. You know, that there's a, the good scientists, the scientists who could solve the problem are afraid to get into the field.
Yeah.
This is a changing a little bit with that guy, Avi Loeb from Harvard, who some dumb billionaire has given him a lot of money, came to him and throwing money at him to do more measurements. But that Avi Loeb is a good man. But he's an observational guy. He doesn't understand how these things work.
Sure. Okay. Sure.
He's measuring. But it's good what he's doing. But these guys don't understand how the thing works. And I'm telling you, we do understand how they work.
Sure. So what do you need? Where do we send the check?
Well,
I was actually scheduled. I was supposed to meet Donald Trump. You know, I have a couple of guys in the intelligence community who know Trump, and Trump knew about this, but it was supposed to be after he got reelected, but he didn't get reelected, so that's the problem.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, speaking of things politically, that was one of the questions that we had from a listener for tonight's episode before we even knew that you were coming on tonight, Jack, was what do you make of the timing of what's going on right now abroad overseas? Is that like some sort of feigned detraction from what's going on within the quote UFO to UAP disclosure, you know, kind of a one hand watch with the other. Watch, look at this hand. Don't pay attention to what we're doing over here. You know?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know the answer to that. I mean, you know, right now we're kind of in a perfect storm. Mm. You know, the COVID and Afghanistan. And I don't want to get too much into politics here because it'd be distracting, but we're in a dangerous situation.
and that's just it. And that's, you know, that's been one of my things that just after my years of work in media, things like that, when I started, number one, it kind of felt funky to me whenever Lou Elizondo came out with this thing and said, like, I held clearances for this program and I put this video out. And then he went out and joined up to the Stars Academy and still maintained clearances. Not only maintained clearances, but actively got new funding for a new program. Despite the fact that he put out footage that wasn't cleared for media release. You know?
Okay, this guy, let me say something about that.
Sure.
The intelligence community is not homogeneous.
No, absolutely not.
They're fighting with each other.
Yeah.
To know, you should really talk to Ron Pandolfi, who was this CIA guy, PhD scientist. I've known him for quite a while. Mm. And Ron says that the whole TTSA, that he says he calls them loons and crooks. Scared that they're scamming the government. Now, I don't know, because I know Hal Putoff, I don't think is, Hal Putoff, I think is a straight guy, but I don't know the people around him. But I do know this, that John Alexander, all these guys are close to Bob Bigelow in Las Vegas, George Knapp, Jacques Vallée, they're all part of the same clique, and they basically don't like me anymore because I'm sort of exposing problems in their physics, but they're trying to sell the government.
Yeah.
But if you want to know more about that, you should really interview Ron Pittman sometime.
Okay.
He has to say, he's on the inside, you know?
Well, you know, for me, it's like I said, it was just the fact of that that did not settle well with me. It still doesn't settle well with me. It still doesn't settle well with me that they are the go-to people, despite nobody really. But yeah, like I say on the show all the time, Jack, I am a believer. But because I'm a believer, that means that my realm of proof should be bigger. My need for proof should be bigger. Yeah. Otherwise, I'm believing out of blind faith.
Also, you should talk to John Warner. And you know about him?
Okay.
The son of the Senator Warner who just died.
Okay.
He has a lot of insight. Yeah, he's also a Mellon. His grandfather is the same grandfather as Chris Mellon. They're cousins. But Warner has a lot of inside information on the kind of things you're just now talking about, you know, military industrial complex.
Well, and you know, that to me is more than anything, I think, what is bringing to bear some of this information. And the fact that, yes, we have that this technology can exist, that it can be there. We're talking about hypersonic intercept systems for missiles. And some people didn't even know the fact that Russia and China were working on hypersonic missile programs.
Yeah.
You know? Thinking that we're at like Concord level and it's going to take 4 hours instead of 8 to get to France. You know?
Yeah. We can get there in seconds.
Yeah. Never mind the fact that they're looking at hypersonic passenger transport.
Okay, let me say something about that.
Sure.
Hypersonic technology is obsolete.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Rockets, jet plane, obsolete. With warp drive, it replaces all of that.
Yeah.
So, for example, when Elon Musk and Branson, and who's the other asshole? Bezos.
Tell us how you really feel, Jack.
Yeah. They're spending, well, you know, they're intelligent assholes, but they're fools. They're brilliant at what they do. They're brilliant at certain things, but they're wasting billions of dollars on rocket technology when they could be building warp drive, Tic Tacs.
Yeah. Yeah.
And to get to Mars in 1 hour or even less.
Yeah.
Because, you know, going through space, you're bypassing space.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And let's go in a little bit more, Jack, into not just the theorem, but the practicality of this science that you're speaking of, the practicalities and the realities of the science of warp drive technology, and how much like they've just not only they just double confirmed the fact that CERN can make matter out of light.
Well, that's old physics. That's not directly related to what I'm talking about.
No. I'm just talking about the technological leaps that we have made as humanity. We are now two steps away from saying, replicator, feed that town. That's pretty incredible technology.
Yes. So the only thing stopping us right now, it's just a political problem. That the government leaders are listening to the wrong people. They should, they should be talking to me and the physicists I'm working with, and not depend only on Hal Puthoff, Eric Davis, Louis Elizondo, and that whole crew. Okay, they should get as much insight from different points of view as possible, and they're not doing that. They're not doing their job. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
They didn't. Somebody paid somebody something somewhere to smooth over that relationship problem, but I die in the dress.
Well, it does help having a rock star front your place.
As soon as I heard that, I was right away suspicious. That's a psychological warfare operation. Yeah. That's just you don't get a clown. I mean, Tom DeLonge, he's a clown. He doesn't have anything.
We've got Jeremy Corbell to take over. He's now the front man. Look at all the stuff.
Which one is he? Is he the guy with the beard?
Yeah, he's the guy that brings out these videos.
He's another idiot. I'm sorry, but he's a schmuck. They're all stupid. They're all so stupid. I hear them talking. I said, where are they getting these clowns?
You know, yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that's kind of like saying, hey, Huey Lewis showed a lab in his video. He can start up a science place, right? Like, he can start up a research institution. He's a scientist. Well, you can fund it. You can fund it. But should you be out, like, speaking on it in that kind of authoritative way? You might want to leave that to one of the physics professors that you're using, you know?
We have a large very soon, and that problem is going to be that if the information that I already have plus the information that's coming that will definitively decide as to if we can prove irrefutable that at least one or two or maybe all three of those videos are not what they kind of made us think that they were. Yep. And I'm not taking away UFO, you know, I'm not trying to attack UFOlogy or anything like that. These three videos were tabloid around, and then we were told they showed extraordinary things, which I looked at the videos, and at first, yeah, I thought so too, because I was being told that. But under further review and scientific principle and methods and applies everything else, not so much.
Yeah.
And that made me curious, and it made me mad. Yeah. Now I'm mad.
Let me say something about that. I think there's this guy, Randolph Stone. He's supposed to be the inspector general who's investigating all this stuff. And he should be taught. I don't see that he's doing his job. He should be contacting you. He should be contacting me and getting all the parties together and defeating this. You know, there should be investigations from the Senate.
Sure.
What's the Intelligence Committee? What's going on? And these dumb bastards are not doing their fucking job. I'm sorry about that.
No.
But it gets me very angry.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Yeah, and that's something. Go ahead, Mike.
Someone listen. I'm sorry. Someone actually listened, because Jack, you're not aware of this, but my FOIA request went in on August 1st. It was replied to, or it was assigned on August 2nd. August 10th, it was approved to go forward, and I received a phone call on August, what was it, 17th, 3 days ago, whenever it was. NASA called me on my FOIA request. I've never seen that done before that fast. And even, you know, Mick and some of the others are saying that, yeah, it's probably going to be a while. And I said, I don't think so. And that's because we did have a little bit of a push by an individual that kind of helped us out a little bit. So there is some people that we can look towards to probably get some things moving. I want to push Jack's envelope here. I want to push the envelope. If Jack's calculations and his everything's correct, we should divert a portion of whatever budget going wherever it's going over to a project and let Jack lead it, give him 2 years to make a prototype or whatever, and to get that working, to give him everything he needs to get that going. Because it doesn't matter if UFOs are real or not, it's the technology.
Yes.
They would have to use that is real, and we can make it today. We don't have to wait 500, 1,000 years, like Lou Elizondo says. It can be done now. We just need to get behind it.
Yeah.
Well, let's put it this way. I think the Russians are going to have it before we get it. Things are going at the moment. Can you imagine if the Iranians got it?
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Okay. But I'll tell you, there's at least 300 to 400 Iranian scientists who are tracking my work, and I can prove that. All you have to do is go on to LinkedIn. I show you I have premium, and you can see all. I have 6,500 people in my network. Several hundred of them are from Iran, and they're from from the physics departments in Iran, engineers, stuff like that. And I know guys in the CIA who said, yeah, that they know this, but nothing's happened. It's crazy.
Yeah. And you know, so, and I'm not saying that there aren't a bunch of stupid people working in our government. Because, I mean, let's be clear. The average as a whole is the fact that most people cannot sift and sort information, Jack.
Yes. Right.
Much less people in a government job. However, I am also of the belief that, yeah, there is a good 1-2% of a cabal in higher places that are either trying to keep funding inside of a special access program, keep funding down from a special access program that is competing against their special access program. Like, good God, I remember friends in college who had their experiments friggin' sabotaged by other people that were going for the same master's degree grant.
Yeah, but this is for all humanity. This would be monumentally, this should be handled entirely different. I don't think, I know Russia, in actuality, I think China is a little bit further along than you may think yet. But as far as the countries being able to bring it to market, so to speak, let's just pretend it's a product. We're trying to get it out to the market.
Yeah.
The United States is the only one that can take it from beginning to end without incorporating any technology from anyone else. Neither China or Russia can do that. They have to get or steal the information and the technology through espionage and various other things. And that's one of the areas I worked in a long time ago, because that's what they did.
Yeah, of course. And by the way, so, you know, Pandolfi, Ron Pandolfi was working on that back in the 90s. You know, he about Chinese espionage.
Mm-hmm.
There was even an article in the New York Times about that. This about 25 years ago.
Yeah. And I've been over there 20, 30, maybe 30 times. And I remember the first time I went there, I was nervous as hell. I did not know what was going to happen. But, you know, everything worked out. But going there and meeting with the factories, having my own products built there, and watching some of the progressions with the students and how they bring the students over to the United States. They train here or they wherever they go. And some of the they have great universities in China, don't get me wrong. But the implementation of some of the technology back, say, just 10, 15 years ago was in no way that they could do this. But now, look at what they've done recently.
Yeah, sure.
They have done some incredible things. I mean, their first attempt to go to market, they got it. They nailed it.
Yeah.
We have you for a few more minutes here, guys. So before we go, Jack, let's kind of focus on where do you think... Because, of course, this is all, quote, disclosure, you know. I said, I think really my thing is enemies have this technology. Enemies are working on this technology. The only way that we're going to be able to, A, explain anything when it happens, or, B, stop it, and people go, whoa, how the heck you stop that, is to let people know that we have the technology somehow, some way, period.
I'm telling you, we understand.
Sure.
I'm telling you, we understand the basic physics, how it works.
Yes.
Okay. That's the first step. Okay. Now that we understand it, we can easily develop the technology given enough resources.
Yeah.
We don't have resources.
And the math and the science is there. Now we have to do, now it's the engineering.
It's the engineering.
That is my exact question, Jack, for you, is that what do you see coming around the corner next? As far as announcement on this news front, like if you were writing the press releases for the lab that was working on this product that's going out and you've got the technology, what would your next press release be? You know, like what would that, like if you were trying to tell the world about what's going on? What do you think the next leap of technology that they're going to try to explain this with, you know, because like I said, they're going to have to explain how this works, how it's happening, okay, period.
Who's they? If you're talking about Louis Elizondo,
they
don't understand anything.
All they
know is it's real.
Yes.
The only good thing Chris Mellon says is that this is a big intelligence failure if we ignore it.
Yeah.
I agree with him on that. But they're depending on the wrong experts. They have the wrong physicists advising them. Okay. Yeah. And until they talk to me, I'm sorry, that doesn't sound, you know, egotistical, but until they talk to Jack Sarfati,
yeah,
they're not going to know anything. Not going to win. But in the meantime, the Russians know I know.
Yeah.
And prove that.
Here's an answer for you on your question. I think I kind of have an idea where you're going. The average person doesn't care how things work. They just care that they work.
Mac is proof of that.
If they pick up the phone and they order a pizza and all of a sudden someone knocks on the door, they don't care how it got there, whether it was a drone or a car or whatever. But what you're saying is that what if they put the replicator inside the room, so to speak? I'm not saying that specifically. I'm just saying the technology advancement so great that everyone should be in awe. I don't think the average person would care either. It'd be like, another new microwave-looking thing. We press a button and the pizza appears inside that device in seconds. They wouldn't care. It'd be cool, just like the microwave or whatever else came out first. It would be obviously leaps and bounds ahead of anything else. But I think we could absorb that technology into the American culture or to the Earth culture very quickly, just like we have.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to like disrupt humanity. Yeah. It's just the fact of the changes that are even most people do not realize that Moore's law has collapsed, that it's gone. You know?
Yeah.
And the mind blow of that, like, man, I grew up with an Atari 2600. You know, like, I'm an 80s kid, man. I remember having a turbo button on my computer that took it to 128 megahertz. I've got like 128 gigs of RAM in this computer that I'm on right now. That's just the memory. That's not even storage capacity. So to see this literal gigaflop of progress in my lifetime, you know, like I said, that we've been working on research, we've been working on metamaterials, things like that. This is just news to some people. They don't realize this stuff goes back to the work of Buckminster Fuller in the 1970s.
That's right. Yes, it does. Yeah.
You know, they don't realize that we were folding carbon nanotubes with people like Buckminster Fuller back then.
Yeah, the geodesic dome is a kind of metamaterial lens. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's good.
So you know, like I said, and like we're saying right now, the average person just it's not on their radar in the everyday. We're people like Jack. You swim in physics. Yeah. That's what you do every day.
Yeah. Okay, the average person isn't really important right now. They're important. Who's important are the people in the Pentagon, intelligence agencies. Yeah. Okay, this guy Randolph Stone in the Inspector General's office in the Pentagon. I mean, he should be talking to Jack Sarfati and finding out. He should be talking to the people I'm working with. By the way, I am working with an international group in Italy, France, and and UK, including one physicist worked many years with the Ministry of Defense, you know, and his part. And I'm supposed to be meeting in Rome with the Italian Air Force to talk about this stuff. If I get there in November, depending on whether we could travel or not. Yeah. So there are. There are foreign powers that are interested. I was even contacted by two guys from Istanbul. One is the CEO of a large industrial corporation, and they want to do something. So
it's out there.
It's in the air.
Well, you know, for me, it's the fact that yes, we are on the cusp of a major change. We are on the cusp of exactly what was happening in the early 90s when computers shifted and CDs became the norm, things like that. We are on the cusp societally of something. You know, as Art Bell put it back in the day, the quickening. You know, things are just happening at a more rapid pace. I mean, they just released an article today, or not today, but this last week, talking about printable skin where you can put electronics in it. You know, things like that. Yeah. So the world of the transhuman is not far off. Once again, transporting things. We've already transported light particles. It's not long before we're into the world of small solid objects or other particles. We've already got invisibility cloaks.
I mean, you're talking about, you know, wormholes, stargates. We can do that. The stargate technology is the same as the warp drive technology.
Interesting.
As soon as you control the gravitational field, you can make stargates.
Yes.
So it's the same. It's the same equations. It's just different applications.
There's a white hole the other end of
a wormhole, or are we able to see these? Or is it, have we seen what we believe to be wormholes or the effects thereof? I'm not talking about black holes. I'm talking about actual.
All we've seen is so far black holes. Although some physicists think that some of these black holes might be wormholes, but we don't know yet. That's going to involve more work by Kip Thorne's group with the LIGO and doing these computations. We don't know for sure. I can say this. The UFOs are proof of wormholes, of stargates.
Sure.
Yeah. That I can say that.
Yeah.
That I can say. Okay.
Because otherwise, where'd they come from?
and that is something that I've held and said on this show numerous times, Jack, is that if anything, what we are looking at is possible either time or dimensional travelers. Not that aliens don't exist, not that alien life forms don't exist, not that it would subtract from the grandiosity of God and creation that they exist. But the odds of them coming here to this rock, as opposed to something closer to them, the odds of us having something from a parallel universe fall through the bubble meniscus between us is much more likely, I think.
I don't think people can have a good concept of how big space is.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to convey that to someone. And I've done it on a much smaller scale just by doing, the sun, the moon, planets,
That's true. That's all true. But with metric, with the kind of stuff I'm talking about, universe. Yeah. Wait, hey, honey, shrunk the universe.
You're talking sending Cassini to Saturn within like a few days, or less than that, hours, minutes. That's just it.
That's a whole other program.
Absolutely. And that's what I was just about to say. I think this has been more than enough information and more than enough of a surprise this time around, Mike Derber. But I definitely want to have you back on, Jack, to talk about wormholes, stargates, things like that. Because, once again, people do not realize that this is a possibility of the known physics we have.
Okay, wait a minute. Okay, but you're being too weak about that.
Oh.
You're being too
sure.
It's not a possibility. It's a reality.
Yes,
it's reality. If you accept the fact of the flying saucer phenomenon, forget those videos, that particular thing. But in general, the thousands of reports. Yes. If you accept that as a fact, then stargates are a reality because that's the only way they can get here. Plus, I have other evidence, but I'm not going to do it on this show.
That's all right.
I have direct contact evidence for what I'm talking about.
Wow.
Okay?
Well,
it gets real.
Mike knows what I'm.
Jack, I can't tell you how much I've enjoyed this last bit of the program. I can't tell you how much I have enjoyed your appearances on Gaia, Deep Space, things like that.
Oh, you saw that? Okay.
Oh, I'm a deep cut hardcore nerd, man. Believe me, I watch all of it. But the data that you are putting out there is so absolutely beautiful, so absolutely amazing, because once again, it just gives proof to the fact that this is existing technology. This is not just in the realm of theorem, it's in the realm of, yes, we can practice it.
And the question is are we? Is someone doing it right now? Hey, and then it's
people
so
doing it, someone is doing it, but they're not us. It's the U.S. government doing it.
Yeah.
Well, and that's just it. People,
the fear that Russia and China are ahead of us, and we dump some money into this, but they're not doing it, which makes me think, well, maybe they're not doing it because they are doing it.
Well, I don't know. You see, here's the thing: those contacts. The 2019 contacts with the drones.
Yeah.
That thing.
Yes.
That could. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if that turned out to be Russia or Chinese. That they have some of the, because they've had at least 5 to 6 years, maybe more, almost 10 years, to develop the kind of technology I've been talking about since 2011.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they may have that. I don't know that they do, but it's a possibility. I would not discount it at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Precisely. And like I said, like, when people don't pay attention to news announcements about, hey, we just made a hypersonic intercept system that we've tested and it works. That's what breaks my heart. Because it's like, if we've got hypersonic technology that they're not talking about, what else do you think we have? You know?
Can you fire a laser at some blank space in front of me and have it talk to me and make me believe that I'm actually seeing something?
Yes. Can we do the same thing and you can touch it and feel it? Yes. You know?
I was at DARPA when we had a think tank across the street, and then DARPA had this one building that's in a weird spot in D.C., but anyway. But you have a DARPA heart, and that's where they take a project, and it's done in such a way that they put a lot of efforts and resources into it, and they bring in a lot of people for think tanks and stuff.
Sure.
And so they had this globe that you walk up to. Now, they didn't have the haptic feel, but you could manipulate objects in 3D space in front of you, and you didn't have to mist the room. There was no mist in the room. There was no powder, no nothing.
Yeah.
It literally was there. And it was just like walking up to the Death Star, you know, view that we all remember from Star Wars, and taking that image and manipulating it with your hand. But now you can feel it.
Yep.
Now you can feel it.
Yeah, precisely. With hypersonic audio, things like that, you can absolutely use waves that are small enough that you can't hear them, but you can definitely feel the vibration.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely amazing technology, and it's out there. It's no longer the realm of science fiction. This is science fact. Like Jack is saying, that we can travel through time if we want to.
Oh, absolutely. You got Doc Brown with you right now.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, once again, Jack, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show tonight. I would love to have you on again and again and again and expose so much more of the world to the amazing research that you have been doing, to the amazing truths that you know from the realm of physics, because it's a whole new world out there, and I don't think people are quite aware of it yet. Well, you know? No.
Not aware of it, and some of the people who should be cooperating with me are preventing this from happening. See,
and granted, a lot of that may be fear, because maybe you don't want to be the one to step out there and get it wrong, you know. But hey, people in charge, welcome to the driver's seat of every scientist in science. You're reaching out on a limb, and you may just be wrong. But that's the point of science.
Exactly.
That's the point of hypothesis and testing a hypothesis with theorem before it becomes a fact. And even then, the fact can either be altered, changed, or worked around.
Exactly.
If it was, and that's something that I've been trying to drive home to my audience and on social media, Jack, is that science by definition is not static.
Exactly.
If science is static, then why on my son's wall is there no planet Pluto?
Right. If science is static, then we are stagnant.
Yeah. Yeah. That means that, like, there will be no more growth. And hey, man, until 500 years ago, the Earth was flat. That was scientific fact. To think otherwise, Jack, you'd get burned at the stake or excommunicated or kicked out of your town. You know, that was witchery to say otherwise. And that was science. That was the known science at the time. And that's what we have to remember, folks, is that science is forever the, quote, known science of the time. Doesn't mean it can't change. Science teaches, it doesn't have opinions. All right, folks? And that's what we have to remember, is that there are facts there. The facts don't lie. The facts have been checked and double-checked. And these theorems are sound. They're there.
Yeah, now we've got to push them forward. We've got to get this done.
We wouldn't have a patent without a working prototype.
Well, Unless you're Sal Bassin. Who knows what he's got.
So, Jack.
Gibberish ever, but maybe he wrote the patents and the patents were gibberish, and maybe he actually has it. That would be really cool. I seriously doubt it.
Why are you talking about patents now? What are you talking about?
Well, just talking about technology that exists. Like, people don't not understanding that the Alcubierre White warp drive is a thing. It's there. The patent exists.
Yeah, we see that flying saucers operate by the Alcubierre. Well, the Alcubierre is just a watered down version.
It's a cog in a system, nothing more. It's a step on the pyramid of the knowledge, you know. But the fact
and now
that
the technology is catching up to the sci-fi, so to speak, and I think that the public's I'm so sick of being told that we need to be conditioned for whatever. We've seen enough movies. We've been, you know, I don't think everyone's going to freak out and do crazy things. There might be some strange religion somewhere that might not take to it, but for the most part, I think everybody's ready.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, we've been ready for a long time.
Well,
we create the technology ourselves. Either way, I think we're ready.
Yeah. Well, Jack, once again, thank you so much for your time this evening. I greatly appreciate it. You have an open invite. Anytime you want to say something, make an announcement, promote whatever. Don't be afraid to give a shout.
Get in touch with me by email so we can.
Oh, absolutely. If I'm not mistaken, we are already connected on LinkedIn, and I will definitely get with you.
I'll send both each other's information so you have it.
And yes. All right, good. Michael, thank you so much as always. If y'all can. Excuse me, sir?
How big is your audience, do you think, roughly?
Into the numerous thousands.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, we get some great response on our episodes, and we have some great conversation from our audience and side conversations on social media, things like that. So,
this is episode 36, Jack. And name change is coming here. Oh, I thought it already happened, but that's going to be a big help.
Coming in December. It's going to be incredible.
Yeah. 336, Jack.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for your time today. We are going to close out this episode. Jack, do you have anything to promote? Any books, appearances, lectures?
No, not right now. Not right now.
Okay.
No,
I'm not, no. Well, as that comes around.
I do books, but just go on. I have a lot of videos.
Okay.
Well, you know. People, just all they do is Google my name.
Yep.
Go on YouTube and Vimeo. They'll find all kinds of stuff.
Great. Well, thank you so much once again for your time. Mike, time for shameless self-promotion. Go for it.
I'm Mike Gerber, 5x5 News. Just to let you know, if you want to see my stuff or more, or even Jack, you can go to 5x5 News on YouTube, or just Google Mike and Jack, or Tic Tac Jack, and you'll find them too. I coined the phrase Tic Tac Jack.
I love it.
You can find me. Just Google 5x5 News or my name or what have you. You'll find good, bad, ugly, and everything in between. But, you know, that's the way life is. So
that's
we'll
right.
Get it together.
Well, thank gentlemen, you. Please do hold the line while we close things out real quick. While you are online checking out all the goodness that is the research of Jack Safarotti, as well as the amazing things that 5x5 News puts out, make sure to stop on by and join the conversation on Facebook. Our page and our group are both Curious Realm, formerly Dudes and Beer, as we are changing over. While you're online checking that out, please do make sure to stop on by the Curious Realm website. That is, once again, a page-for-page copy of Dudes and Beer. All the same information, all the same great documents that we have been talking about today, like the Alcubierre White Warp Drive, things like that, right there in the Knowledge Vault. Until next time, everybody, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and if you can't be good at it. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Dudes and Beer Podcast. To listen to our audio streams or chat with us live, download the official Dudes and Beer app for Android and iDevices, available on Google Play and iTunes markets. For more episodes, content, and information, visit us online at dudesandbeer.com. You can also find our episodes on Breach.tv, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, SoundCloud, iTunes, YouTube, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Dudes and Beer is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more about our sponsors and other podcasts on this network, visit hcuniversalnetwork.com. Thanks for listening, everybody. And until next time, drink responsibly.